For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome. For new people, I'm Taigen Layton, the teacher here at Ancient Dragon Zengate, and I'm very happy to have giving the talk tonight Paula Lazars, who's a member of our board and the chair of our fundraising committee. And Paula, thank you very much for giving the talk.
So I'd like to thank Taigen again for giving me this opportunity to express some aspects of my own practice. And I hope to put some ideas out there that might be helpful to other people as well. What I wanted to talk today about is work as practice. Hopefully, thinking about work as practice, it ends up being work practice instead of work as practice. But I'm highly qualified to speak to this topic because I've worked most of my life, and I'm sure that most of you have done the same. The word work itself brings up a lot of connotations in people's minds, and it's a heavy word, and most of the time it's used in a somewhat negative way. Oh, I have to work. Oh, I can't wait till I'm done with work. Oh, I can't wait until Friday so I don't have to work for a couple of days. So I want to take a look at what we're actually doing and try to find a way to look at it in a more positive light, in a more realistic light, and in a way that we can incorporate it into what we do on the cushion. So to start, I wanted to just define exactly what work is, because in our minds, most of the time, it's about doing something to make money. Are doing something to make a living, but most of us know we need to make money in order to make a living. So the actual definition is exertion or effort directed to produce or accomplish something, or a product of exertion or activity. So really what it is, it's an action that doesn't have a monetary value to it. It's just an action. So some of us work at other things. Some of us work on pieces of art. Some of us work at becoming a good cook. Some of us work at home doing house cleaning. So there's a lot of reasons we might do work. Every single one of those can be used for practice. Stripping away all of it, what is this activity really all about? When we think about it, we inhabit our body, and it has a lot to do with taking care of the body. If we go back in time, why did the first human beings get up and start doing any kind of work? They needed to eat. They needed to find shelter. They needed to clothe themselves. So work itself, in any variation, has a lot to do with taking care of our body. And our bodies are the things that allow us to be active. Our bodies almost demand activity as expression. So working in itself is a very natural thing for us to do. It's an inherent part of our human existence. Caring for the body is a large percentage of our life. And I don't need to go into that more. We all know that if we're anywhere past 25, we think a lot about how much we really need to do to take care of our body, not only our personal grooming, but going out into the world and figuring out a way to eat and have shelter and all these other things. So since, as human beings, we're inclined to activity, we know we have to work. We don't have a choice. In some fashion, we have to work. So that's an important place to start. Briefly talking about work as far as Sangha history. In India, there was no real codified or quantified or defined way of how work was enveloped into Sangha activities. But we have to assume, since they were human beings, there was work that was delegated and work had to be done to help to take care of the community. It didn't get very quantified and organized until Buddhism moved to China and Japan. And there are strict guidelines even within our own system on how we go about taking care of the work to maintain the temple, to maintain the people in the Sangha when people live in a monastic community. And they're very clear guidelines on how to do almost every task involved in the temple. So we know at some point there was a lot of thought and decision made to using work as a vehicle for practice. Otherwise, this codification or these regulations or these methodologies on how to do it would never have come to light and would never have been written down. For me, I think about work a lot because I'm someone who likes activity. I like to do things. I like to feel I'm accomplishing something. I like doing things with groups of people. I like how we feel when we accomplish a task together. But when I started practicing within the Sangha, just the way we go about handling work in the Sangha changed my perception of work itself. And one of the main situations I found myself in that really changed how I looked at work was I did a week at Green Gulch just as a guest student, which means I wasn't in sesshin, I wasn't sitting in meditation for, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day. I was just there sitting with the community when they did and doing the work that they did to maintain the community and the buildings and everything else. The biggest thing that stuck out at me about that experience is we did the same jobs every day, whether they needed to be done or not. A lot of times we make the decision to do a job because we feel it needs to be done, but in the temple setting, we did it, we washed the same table, we swept the same floor, whether there was dirt on it or not, at the same times every day. So with that being said, it changes your relationship to the work you're doing. Because you're not necessarily doing it for some kind of end result. You're doing it to do it, just to do it. And then it made me realize that if I wasn't doing that, what else would I be doing? So this is something to think about. If you're not doing the task, what else would you really be doing? You can only watch so much TV. You can only listen to so much music. You could, you know, and I could go on. So trying to have a relationship to our work in that sense, saying, if I wasn't doing this, what else would I really be doing? How would I fill up 24 hours in the day? Stop focusing on getting the job done. Change my perception of the work. And then also working in silence was important because we can't distract ourselves then from the task at hand. It doesn't mean that in our normal lives we would work in silence because obviously we have to communicate to each other in our jobs. But it's an important component about changing the relationship to the actual activity that you're doing, is to not put on the radio or think about something else or anticipate what you're going to do after the job is done because you don't want to do the job. So staying at Green Gulch helped me realize these things about work. And it was only a week, but we did a lot of things in repetition. So with that being said, how do we take our daily work, our livelihood, into Buddhist practice? First, we could look at the precepts, the 16 Bodhisattva precepts, and one of them asks us to not harbor ill will. And I feel that any approach we have for work as practice, we have to look at how we feel about our job first. And if we're harboring any kind of ill will about our work, we need to work with that to get past that feeling of ill will, anger, or resentment. Most of the time, ill will towards our work stems from a couple of things. Lack of control in the workplace. So we don't feel that we have control over our environment. And that's a big issue. We don't feel we're making decisions that affect our day. We don't feel we could be with people we like. We just don't feel that we're autonomous in any way. Lack of choice sometimes harbors ill will in our job. We might feel that the job market is poor, so we're not working to what our career path is. And I'm sure a lot of people find themselves in that kind of situation in this economy. So that's a lack of choice, and that could bring resentment. I went to school for 8 years to study XXX, and here I am, you know, slinging a towel and washing a table. Oftentimes, people have to work because they're supporting other loved ones. And sometimes there might be a resentment in that also. Why aren't they working and I have to work? Or how did I get myself in this situation where I have to support these people? There are many ways to resolve those different issues. So this talk isn't necessarily about that. But in reality, if we do have issues like that about our work, first off, we need to approach it with patience, because the situation can always be changed if we stop, have patience, and take one foot in front of the other to find a solution to how we're feeling. So it's important to realize on some level there is a certain amount of self-determination that goes into our work environment and our career paths and the choices we have. Service. So a lot of times in Buddhist practice, we want to be of help to other people or of service to other people. Service is the action of helping or doing work for someone. It's an act of helpful activity. So that's already folded into the idea of work. And all jobs that we do have an idea of providing a service for somebody else. We never work in a vacuum, and there could be a lot of debate about whether that's true or not. But any company you work for has a mission statement, and whether they're actually doing this or not, within that mission statement or purpose for existing, in some fashion, will have an idea of service for somebody else or providing a service. We need to find out what that is within our environment, our work environment, and completely understand the goal of the company and what service we're trying to provide. Even if you work in a restaurant and you're serving food, the food is there for the pleasure of the people eating it. So you're not just slapping a plate down in front of somebody. The restaurant was opened because the person whose idea it was wanted to make people happy and wanted to enjoy the feeling of satisfying people's hunger, filling their bellies, and giving them a good experience in the restaurant. So maybe in our jobs we might be removed from that idea, but we need to find out where that idea is within the work environment. All jobs have a clearly defined goal. Be clear on the goal. And in this way, maybe it could help us be clear on our task and understand how to provide a service to other people and to act in a helpful way. So if we look at our sitting meditation, if we could get past any ill will we might have towards our jobs, if we could figure out how we're providing a service to other people, in what framework, then we could think about what we do on the cushion and see how we can apply that to our work environment. So we know the first thing, we're all here because we made a commitment to sit down for a set period of time. And I feel personally, for myself, coming here and saying I'm going to sit down for a set period of time helps me with my sitting practice, because if I was alone and if I get tired or uncomfortable, I could just get up. But because all of you are here with me, helping me sit, and we haven't agreed upon allocated time, we're going to wait for the bell to ring. We're in this together and we're sitting here for a certain period. And no matter what happens on this cushion, whether our leg hurts, our back hurts, no matter what emotions arise, no matter what our day was like, and even if we're not thinking about our breath or we're thinking about something else, we've made a commitment to sit here for that period of time. And that's what we do every day when we go to work. For most of us, we can't just get up and leave when we feel like it. There's a time allocation to what we're doing. So in that sense, that's the same. No matter what happens, we're making a commitment to stay there and see it through. Our breath. So once we have made a decision to stay there and see it through, anything can happen within the confines of our job. Some of it good, some of it bad. But we could always take a moment to stop and find our breath again. Now let's say you're having a good day and there's nothing really upsetting. In this situation, we normally don't worry about finding our breath and calming ourselves down or whatever all of that means to us. That's the best time to find your breath because it's easy. You're feeling good. You got a big project done. Everybody's slapping on the back telling you what a great person you are. There's a feeling of camaraderie and openness. Find your breath. Breathe deeply so that you could know what that feels like when you're in a positive state of mind. Once you find that area, when the day is different, because every day is different, and you're upset with the coworker, or you didn't get the raise you were trying to get, or the project you were working on got shelved, or every customer that's coming into the establishment you're working at is a real jerk to you, and taking out their own personal frustrations, find the breath. Because you're good at it. Because you did it when you were feeling good. So stop, find the breath. Most people who know me, and many people in the Sangha know me, they know that it's very hard for me to speak in this pace. To not say and to maybe pause every now and then before I speak again to collect my thoughts. So in this way, I'm trying to find my breath. I'm trying to find the pause and the stillness. So if I could do that right now in this situation, I know everybody could do it at work. Once we do that, we're stuck somewhere for a period of time, we found our breath, we find the pauses, then we could truly listen. We know when we sit on the cushion, the first person we're listening to is ourselves. And we've made a commitment to sit down and really, really listen to ourselves without distraction. And then maybe it broadens a little bit. We become aware of the environment without looking at the environment. We become aware of the environment without actually listening to the environment. We become aware of how the environment feels without actually touching the environment because we're sitting in zazen. So we start with ourselves and then we open up to the environment more. So even in our work environment, we start by listening to ourselves. How are we responding to what's going on around us, whether it's positive or negative? And once we get a sense of that, we truly listen to our coworkers and the people around us. Truly listening is a project in itself. I either read something somewhere or I listened to a lecture online or something where and I don't remember who it was, but the person said, truly listening is hearing without thinking about what you want to say back while you're listening. So if we apply this to our work environment, you know, we're goal-oriented, we're task-oriented, so often we're already thinking about what we're going to say when the person is halfway through their sentence. So one way to work at truly listening is to just stop and listen and not start thinking of our response until the person is absolutely done with what they're saying. And the response will be there. We don't need to start choreographing it beforehand. But this is some ways to work with truly listening and being fully present to the environment around us. Once we can do that, just like on our cushion, maybe we'll feel an expansiveness and an openness. When Tigan and I were discussing doing this talk and the subject of the talk, he brought up the 10 paramitas. So I didn't even get onto those at all. Because I feel here's the road we're on until we could feel that openness and expansiveness, and then maybe we could get to the 10 paramitas. And they're just really right conduct and ethical conduct. And I'll say these briefly for people who aren't sure what they are: generosity, ethical conduct, patience, effort, meditation, wisdom, skillful means, vow, powers, knowledge. Once we feel that expansiveness and openness, we could start thinking about the 10 paramitas and how to apply these to our work environment. But the soil needs to be there. And again, it's circular. It doesn't mean one happens and then the other happens. But these don't happen on their own. They don't just miraculously appear. So once we can apply some of these things to the work situation, we could give ourselves wholeheartedly to our task with every fiber of our being, with our heart, with compassion, just like we want to do with Zazen, ideally, is give our entire selves to it when we're sitting here. And in this way, hopefully, our work can be an entryway to practice or a vehicle to practice. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Paula. So, comments, questions, responses, very lovely, practical opening to thinking about aspects of practice. So, responses, please.
Yeah. Paula, thanks for the talk. I liked it a lot. One of the things that I started doing a couple of years ago, I'm a professor, and before teaching any class, even if I was sort of on my way walking there, I would pay attention to three breaths. I think that like following the breath is, you know, and I would do it like while I was walking up the stairs or whatever, you know, I didn't stop, but just, you know, as I was getting there, just paid attention, 1, 2, 3. And I found that it kind of reset my expectations about what was going to happen in a classroom situation. Like a lot of work situations, there's sort of my set goals of what I think has to happen, and then there's all the things that are actually going to happen, and you know, the trick is finding out how those two connect. And but I found that, you know, if I would just take just those couple of seconds before a class, before walking in, I had a different kind of awareness of how students were reacting, what the energy level in the room was, a different awareness of my own. Was I nervous? Was I hyped up? You know, so it really helped. So the follow the breath suggestion, I think, is wonderful. It's helped me tremendously.
Thank you.
Jeff.
Thanks so much. One thing that it just seems like, I was wondering if you could speak to, it seems like kind of a paradox that I can't really, I feel like I can't really practice meditation with goals, but I wouldn't do it if I kind of expect to get something out of it. You know, I do it because I feel more centered and sleep better and interact better with other people. And there are a lot of, I think there are a lot of benefits to having a meditation practice, but the practice is, you know, not like reaching after all that stuff. So I guess I have kind of a hard time reconciling those two.
Question, please.
So from my own experience, and this goes back to I'm a person who likes activity, and I've been attracted to Buddhism for years on many different levels, but the Zazen is coming very late for me because I would not be able to sit. Okay, I just couldn't until the last like 3 years ago. And I'm not a young woman, okay? The way I feel about that is people do any activity for a reason. And without the reason, they're not going to do the activity because we're human beings and that's how we're wired. And that's how we're taught even from childhood. You know, if you do this, you get that. If you do this, you're going to go far in life. If you do this activity, you're going to acquire this skill. So we can't just turn that off automatically, even when we get exposed to the practice. So what I'm trying to say is don't beat yourself up because you were trying to gain something from doing meditation. But just do it. Just sit. Don't beat yourself up if you have a goal, but just still sit anyway. And the gaining attitude will drop off on its own. And that happens from trusting the activity you're doing. Everything about this practice is so old. It's thousands of years old. So it almost, there's proof in the pudding. You know, people have been doing it for so long and they write all these things about it and they say that all these things are going to happen when you do it, and we have to believe it because people have been doing it for so long. But they get all these things by doing it. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if you have a goal, I feel it's okay, but still sit down on the cushion and follow your breath. If you can't just sit there, and I know like a silent illumination, just sit there with everything, maybe you can't do that right now. And that's okay. Sit down and follow your breath. And then eventually you're going to be able to sit down and be open to everything without having a goal, without a gaining attitude. It'll just happen organically on its own by trusting the process that you've basically surrendered yourself to.
Thank you, Paula. Yeah, I'll just add to that, and agree with what you said, but it's okay that you know, we all come to practice with some desire or wanting something, some calm or settledness or, you know, some problem or some need in our life or feelings that suffering in ourselves or in the world or whatever, but Suzuki Roshi talks about non-gaining attitude a lot, and we talk about that in Soto Zen, but the point isn't that there is benefit from this practice. I mean, there is. It's obvious if you do it a while, but it's not the benefit that we think it is. So whatever goal you think you have in practice, that's not it. So whatever we think we want in our life or we think we will get from doing something as simple and ridiculous as just sitting facing the wall for whatever, that's not what it's about. It's deeper than that. We can't possibly understand how deep it is. And yet it does have a positive beneficial effect, and we can talk about that in various ways. So it's okay to want, you know, to be happier or to want to be calmer or to want to be able to sleep better or whatever, that's fine. And some of those things might happen in some ways, but our idea of why we're practicing isn't it's beyond that. Does that help? other comments or responses for Paula, or reflections, or anything else you have to say about work and practice? Yes, Brian.
A little over a year ago, I retired, and prior to that time, I was engaged in a long period of time of doing work that I felt was very meaningful. And since then, you know, the kind of work I do is cleaning the apartment and going grocery shopping and dealing with the insurance company online. I mean, there's all these things we have to do that are effort. When you started with the definition of work as effort for some goal, that was very helpful for me, because I discovered that I get sort of lost if I don't have any work. But that doesn't mean I have to do so-called meaningful work. It just means that I need to produce some effort towards something. And I discovered that if I do it with awareness, it's wonderful. And I don't mind struggling for work. In fact, I get into it. Part of that is having the time to do it when you go slowly, but it's different. The meaning is not in the meaning of it. It's the moment of it. And life is full of work. It's full of effort, even if we don't have a job.
I think it's a little bit related to all of what's been discussed, but I sort of remember when I first became an attorney, I would go on vacation for 2 weeks, and I'd worry, like, towards the end that I'd forgotten everything. You know, it's sort of like when you're in school and you're off for summer break. And you kind of get to a place where you do it over and over and over again. And now you can probably wake me up at 2 a.m. and ask me a definition of a business associate under HIPAA, and I can tell you after I got because it's just sort of how I am. And I sort of had to get used to the idea, I'm an attorney. Even when I try to turn it off, that's just me, it's how I think, it's how I am. And there are times when that's not a lot of fun to be. And there's other times when it's really good. But the things that I thought would be the perks of being the attorney are not there. You don't see them anymore. They're gone. There's just sort of the essence of it is left. I think sometimes with our practice, if you're worried that you've got some goal-seeking mind with it, you know, at some point that goal is going to fall away, and you're going to see it. And that's really a kind of can be a difficult time, I think, because all the things, you know, that idea you had, I'm going to be enlightened, or I'm going to be so freaking cool. You realize you're never going to be cool. This is floating on. You still are just going to be you, you know? And when you still, in spite of that, get up in the morning and sit, that's when the practice really starts. Then.
Responses.
I was going to say, I know I have more patience from sitting, and I don't know why. So that's one thing. With doing Zazen, there necessarily isn't, you know, A leads to B, leads to C, leads to D. And I still don't understand why I'm more patient the more, and it's not about just sitting on the cushion, though. It's much deeper than that, because I'm patient within activity. And what I mean is that I respond, it's easier for me to take time to respond more skillfully to people that might be irritating me, or a situation that might be irritating me. So that's when I really notice that I'm more patient, because of responding more responsibly and skillfully and taking time to think about what's going on with the other person. And I find myself thinking about this, like I just don't know why this practice is directly affecting my patience, but it is. And I don't care why, it's just I'm more patient, so yay. You know, so it's kind of one of those things.
Morgan, did you have your hand up?
Just something that you said about work practice, because it's actually something I've been thinking about. I actually just got a job at Fuller Chicago as a dishwasher, and basically, it's definitely not a lazy job. You go in there and you have, like, constantly, you know, you have to check your dinner plates, you got your silverware, you got pizza pans, you got all sorts of dishes just being thrown at you, and, you know, very quickly they pile up, and it's like, I look at this, you know, this heap, and it's like, oh my God, you know, what do you do? But going with what you said about following your breath, I've actually found that when I do, you know, slow down, I just count my breath, and before it, and I'm just in the motion of washing dishes and just breathing and just kind of focusing on the moment of just, I'm washing this dish now and passing it on, you know, so on and so forth, before I realize it's like, you know, the whole pile's gone. I'm finished, so I mean, I guess going to what you're saying about follow the breath and how that kind of relates to work, that helps me out. And even the I won't say the mindset of being, like, not even really thinking about it, but grabbing dishes, washing them, you know, I have to go again, there's another sink behind me I have to tend to. It's almost like I do get kind of lost in the motion of it, not really thinking about it, you know, just motion and breathing. And it's funny, I can kind of correlate that with my zazen now. It's just, you know, just breathing, not really thinking about it, anything in particular, just letting everything be the way it is. Sorry.
No, you are a very lucky person, because tasks like that, the rhythm of the activity is very meditative. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to be learned in breathing, moving, and doing this task, taking, washing, putting it there, taking, washing, putting it there. It's difficult, but at the same time, there's different avenues that could open up from doing a repetitive task like that. It's very, very, very much like zazen. So in many ways, you get to do zazen 10 hours a day. Okay? But not, and then on the other, I've had jobs like this. You know, I've had so many different jobs. So it's the same kind of thing. And also, I'm endlessly fascinated with jobs like that on how you never accomplish the task.
Right.
Because it continuously, whenever you finish, boom. And whether it's living in a family situation where you're doing house cleaning, or like this in a restaurant situation, so you can't take pride in your accomplishment because it never ends. You can, to a point, once you finish one dish, okay, wow, it's clean, isn't that nice? Whoop, there's more, you know? But that's all the accomplishment that's there, because it's a never-ending process. So that right there is a koan. And you get to work on that koan 10 hours a day. There's a lot to be learned in repetitive tasks. And you know, when I was thinking about this, we're getting so far away from using physical labor in any sense. And I was thinking, when is it going to be where we're just thinking and speaking, not even typing anymore? And we're going to lose, I really believe this, we're going to lose a certain aspect of our humanity at that point. So you're not, because you're doing a job where you have to inhabit your body. You have to use your body to do this job. So there's a lot to be gained in it, and you're gaining things that a lot of people are missing. I, you know, and again, I do martial arts, so I think about this a lot, because what I do is very physical. At one point, I wasn't doing physical work. So I know the difference. And then at some points, I've done jobs like that in service industry. So
I'll just, it's a good note to close on, and I'll just second everything that Paula just said. I've done that kind of work too, and it's very helpful to practice, to have a physical repetitive job, and especially one where there's a lot, where there's constant demand, and you have to kind of slow down, which is another way of saying be with your breath. And just, but also to physically know where everything is, and actually, you know, everything is working physically. And an important part of zazen is that it is physical. It's not just some idea. It's you're sitting there, and your body's going to remind you that your body's there. And there's a wonderful section in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, where he talks about the spirit of repetition and just doing the same thing over and over again. And that's a physical thing. So that's that's part of the heart of work and work practice, as you're saying. So thank you very much, Paula. We'll close formally with the four Bodhisattva vows, which are on the next to the last page of your chant book, which we chant three times.
Things are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma is our boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it. I vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable.